This is the Left Pod.
Hello and welcome to the Learn English Football Podcast with your hosts, Tim and...
Tom. Hello, Tim. How are you?
I'm okay, Tom. I'm probably doing very similarly to you, actually. Slightly disappointed, but at the same time, I can't have too many complaints. I'm obviously talking about my feelings after the Arsenal match and Arsenal being eliminated from the Champions League. How about you, Tom? West Ham nearly got a result, the first winner of the season against Leverkusen, but it was unlucky in the end. It was a draw, 1-1, right?
It was, yes. We'll be coming around to these games very soon, actually, Tim, won't we? Because tonight we are going to review the Champions League, the four second leg quarterfinal matches, and we've also got a bit of time to talk about West Ham against Leverkusen and Atalanta, who pulled off a remarkable upset by eliminating Liverpool from the Europa League. So where are we going to start tonight? What games first?
We're going to start with Barcelona Paris Saint-Germain, which of course was evenly balanced after the first game in Paris. They were going back to Barcelona, of course not the Camp Nou, but hopes were high for Barcelona fans. I think they surprised a lot of themselves and the world of football in Paris by getting the win, and they made a great start. Rafinha, who's been criticised during his time at Barcelona. He's had a great Champions League quarterfinal. I think he scored two goals. Was it two goals in the first leg? And he's got another one again tonight. But, Tom, Paris Saint-Germain did look dangerous. They looked really dangerous. They had Dembele was looking good. Vitinha, I know he's a player we've spoken about before on the podcast. He really is an exciting young player. And I think he's the kind of player which makes a big difference for Paris Saint-Germain. But it wasn't the players for the Paris Saint-Germain so much that turned the match in favour of the visiting French side, Tom. It was the red card, Araujo, or as they pronounce it here, Araujo. I think it's easier, so they just cut out the middle A. Tom, I don't know if you've seen it. I thought it was a stone-cold red card. When something's a stone-cold red card, Tom, what do I mean?
It means it was a clear and obvious infraction or a bad decision, and the red card was deserved.
Yeah, the Paris Saint-Germain player got goal side of Araujo, and I think the defender needed just to accept that he wasn't going to get there. He needed to trust in his goalkeeper and maybe just accept that Barcelona were going to concede a goal. But I think he was captain on the night as well. Maybe he felt a responsibility to really try and stop the situation. And it was a clumsy foul. He was nowhere near the ball. The body was between him and the ball. And... you know, a red card, 10 men against Paris Saint-Germain, and it was a difficult enough prospect anyway. Do you think Barcelona realistically had any chance once they were down to 10 men, Tom?
It would be require a mighty effort. I do, of course, remember a spectacular Barcelona comeback a few years ago. This was when they were losing after a first leg in Paris Saint-Germain 4-0. And I believe they won the second leg at the Nou Camp 6-1. However, that Barcelona team had players the quality of Neymar Jr. and Luis Suarez and, of course, Lionel Messi playing. So this Barcelona team with 10 men against a team with the quality of players like Mbappe, it was going to require a miracle. That miracle wasn't coming. I have to say, Tim, I do agree with you about the red card. I listened to Barcelona fans saying it was unfair, it was unjustified. But when I watched it back, Araujo just, he made a bad momentary decision. I can see why he did it. At that moment, he decided better to foul this player outside of the area. He raised his hand to take him out outside of the area, and perhaps he was thinking that it will only be a yellow card, but it was a moment of madness because the player would have been on through on goal, however at a tight angle. I would give Ter Stegen, the Barcelona goalkeeper, at least a 50% chance of blocking that shot. However, even if the player scores and Barcelona concede one goal, still much better for them if they've still got 11 players on the field. At playing at home, they would have had a chance. So I don't know if you saw after the game, Gundogan, İlkay Gundogan, was very critical of Araujo, saying that he killed the game for us. He blamed him for it, and he received some criticism from the Barcelona teammates who were more supportive of Araujo. However, I support Gundogan in this decision. I do believe that that moment did kill the game for Barcelona.
Well, I mean, I agree with Gundogan, and also it wasn't just Gundogan; it was his misses as well. And you know, it's not the first time this season that on the Learn English Football podcast that a partner has got involved with the comments. I can't remember who it was now off the top of my head.
Yes, it was the Chelsea centre back.
Silva, of course.
That's right. Yes.
And I think it's a sign of a broken dressing room a bit when that kind of stuff's coming out, because I think there should be a code of silence, a code of unity in a dressing room. And you can see from what's happening at Chelsea that is a symptom of something broken. But and the reason why it was such a moment of madness, because Barcelona were two goals up at the time. They were playing at home and they were playing reasonably well, although Paris Saint-Germain had more of the ball and more of the chances at the moment of the red. When the red card happened, they still had a two-goal advantage, but the goal before half-time, the Ousmane Dembele goal before half-time, I think made it almost impossible, because 45 minutes, it was just going to be too much for them. And then the Vitinha goal just after half-time, it levelled the tie, and it meant it was just going to be impossible. And then, of course, Mbappe comes up to put the icing on the cake, Tom. If I put the icing on the cake, what does that mean?
You supply the finish to the occasion or the encounter.
Yeah, the final good thing to an already good thing. Paris Saint-Germain were already winning. They were already in the lead. And then Mbappe just put the final touches on it. Tom, I think, although I personally have criticised this Paris Saint-Germain side before for not having the intensity at the most important moments, really suffering from playing in the French League, really. But I do see this side, and I think they're slightly different. I look at players like Vitinha, Emery, Fabian Ruiz, of course, the Spanish player. And I think they do a lot of the hard work. They're willing to make a run without expecting to receive the ball to open up some space. Mendes at left back had a good game. Hakimi is a great player. I think the only kind of Hollywood old name that I still do have questions about, I think there's two now still in the side, Marquinhos and Donnarumma. Donnarumma did have some shaky moments over the tie, but he did also make some good saves. The big question, Tom, before we go into the draw, are this Paris Saint-Germain side good enough to go all the way and win the tournament?
I still don't think they are. Of course, when you have a World Cup winner like Kylian Mbappe leading the line of attack for you, then you can't write them off. But I see that there's a lot of inexperience in this team. They're undoubtedly very talented players, Barcola, Zaire, Emery. You mentioned, Fabian Ruiz and Vitinha, still quite young. I'm not sure if they have enough experience of the big occasion to go on and win it. But you are right as well that Marquinhos is not the player that he was about 3 years ago. He seems a little bit less sure than he was when at his prime 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah. Should we move on, Tom, and talk about the Dortmund-Atletico match?
Let's do it, yes.
Yeah. I think the footballing world will have been watching the Barcelona-Paris Saint-Germain match, apart from, of course, Borussia Dortmund fans, Atletico Madrid fans, and you. This was the football purists' match for the evening. And to be honest, Tom, I think you got a bit of a payback on your decision, didn't you? Because, I mean, I was watching it on the small screen next to my big screen, and wow, I nearly turned over. Dortmund started really well, two quick goals, and then Atletico fired back into the game with a Hummels own goal and then a Correa goal. I saw the goal. It was a kind of double strike, wasn't it? The ball came back to him after he'd already had a shot. A fantastic reaction to get that ball into the back of the net. And then that one of my favourite players at the moment, I'm probably not going to pronounce his name well, but Fulkrung. I think he's a dying breed of a pure number nine. And that header at the front post, wow. You don't have many strikers in world football anymore who are scoring goals like that. They used to be common goals, but what a goal. And then Manchester United fans might be wondering why this Sabitzer is looking so good for Dortmund when he looked so ordinary for United. Tom, it was a real roller coaster of a match. I backed Atletico last week on the podcast. You backed Borussia Dortmund. What was the key behind the Dortmund victory? Who were the key players?
First and foremost, Julian Brandt playing as their attacking midfielder. He scored the first goal for Dortmund, but he was instrumental throughout in linking the, you know, coming out of defence and turning the team into a dangerous attacking threat. He scored the first goal, but he was also instrumental in Sabitzer's final goal as well. So he was probably one of the shining stars, if not the man of the match. Oh, no, actually, I can't give him the man of the match because you've already mentioned Sabitzer. He had a golden chance after 2 minutes. The game had only been gone for 2 minutes, and then Morata went straight down the other end and had a great chance for Atletico. So right from the get-go, from the very beginning of this match, it appeared to be a very open game with both teams prepared to push forward and leave themselves exposed behind. And in the end, you talked about Sabitz Fulkrug's goal for the header. Yes, it was a phenomenal header. He jumped up so high and he put the ball inch perfectly inside the far post. It just clipped the post on the way in. The timing of the jump, it was excellent, but also credit to Sabitzer, who wrapped his left foot around the ball to deliver a perfect cross, running at speed down the left wing. So, and then 2 or 3 minutes later, Sabitzer buries a chance which breaks to him just on the edge of the 18-yard box. So he was probably my man of the match just because of his involvement. But the whole Dortmund team showed incredible spirit to come back because here's where I have to give credit to Atletico, actually. At the start of the second half, Diego Simeone made three attacking changes. He replaced his fullbacks with Barrios and Riquelme, and he put Correa on up front instead of Morata. And it paid off immediately. Correa had a great chance, and then he scored that very, very good goal, which he was also instrumental in creating. He caught a rebound, but he caught it very well. It rebounded off the goalkeeper. And at that moment in time, Atletico had equalised to make the game 2-2, and it had put them ahead on aggregate. So Atletico went back into a winning position. But this Dortmund team, when they're playing at home with the whole stadium behind them, the atmosphere and the self-belief that they have, and I saw that this self-belief would have been there after the first leg, even though they lost that game, as I mentioned, just for the width of a crossbar and post, they could easily have gone back to Germany at 2-2 after the first leg. And the fans always believed, the players always believed, and they put the game, they buried the game and just carried it home with their style of play. There's also one more thing I have to mention, Tim. One other player, Maddison, British player.
Scored a goal, right? Chelsea loanee?
Chelsea loanee. He was loaned out to Burnley last season, was instrumental in their promotion, couldn't get into the Chelsea side. I'm sure Chelsea are regretting it at this moment, looking at Malo Gusto, some of his performances for Chelsea. And he scored an absolutely beautiful goal. It was Sabitzer again, who just laid the ball off to him as he was running into the area. And it was beautiful because the first touch and the second touch were absolutely perfect to find the space in the box to create the angle for the third shot, which was drilled low just inside the far post, clipped the inside of the post on the way in again, which is testament to a perfectly placed finish. But for me, it was actually the first two touches that he had, because when you're running at speed into a penalty area, and you're able to cushion the ball so well and keep the control so close to you, he showed that he has a gem of a left foot in terms of his ability. So credit to Maddison for that goal as well.
Yeah, and this Dortmund side, I mean, you know, they were only half an hour away from winning the German league last season. They are a class team. Of course, they have lost some talent in Jude Bellingham, but they've also, I suppose they've got Jadon Sancho back from United, who's been putting in some positive performances as well. So they're a team with lots to be positive about and a real team spirit. You mentioned the fans. I'm going to say that they could go all the way. It's going to be a tight semi-final. I don't want to talk too much about it. But of course, Paris Saint-Germain, Dortmund, they were in the same group. Dortmund finished top of the group, but they drew in Dortmund against Paris Saint-Germain and they lost away against Paris Saint-Germain. However, Dortmund had already qualified, if my memory serves me correctly. So it's going to be a fascinating match and a real match of world-famous stars against a really united, tactically well-formed team. So I'm going to be hoping for Dortmund, but expecting Paris Saint-Germain. What about Tom? Who are you going to be hoping for or who are you going to be expecting, without going into details?
Well, Tim, I've got my pride at stake because I think we can go back to maybe October or November, where I pointed out this Dortmund team as fancying them to go very far in this tournament. That was when they went to Newcastle, to St. James's Park, and they had a magnificent 2-0 victory there at a time when Newcastle were in form in the Champions League. It was the game after they'd put four past Paris Saint-Germain. So that was the moment I saw that this Dortmund team have quality, they have a fluid attacking style of play, and they have incredible strength in depth. I'm talking about the bench they have. Haller was injured for that game, but it doesn't matter when you can bring on Marco Reus, Jamie Bynoe-Gittens, another English player who's performing well on the German stage. Throughout their bench, they've got enough quality that I fancy them to beat Paris Saint-Germain.
Yeah, well, it's going to be an interesting match. Tom, one more, moving on to the next match then. I wish it was just one more match to talk about, but in fact, we've still got two Champions League matches to talk about. We're going to talk about what I would say is on paper the most attractive quarterfinal match between essentially the two favourites for the tournament, Manchester City and Real Madrid. An absolute epic first leg in Madrid, finished 3-3. And this one, Real Madrid won on penalties and job done, game over. But it wasn't that simple. In fact, I think Pep Guardiola will really be kicking himself, because this was a match where I think anyone who'd never seen Real Madrid play before would think that Real Madrid were a small side from a country who has football clubs with no money, because their lack of ambition compared to Manchester City, it really was like watching, Atletico against Real Madrid. And it's funny because all these Real Madrid fans who spend their life talking about anti-football, talking about parking the bus, talking about, you know, needing to play attacking football, suddenly are now talking about defensive masterclass, tactical knowledge, unity in the dressing room, pride, passion, all these words that are usually ignored. Tom, statistics wise, we're talking 33 shots from Manchester City to Real Madrid's 8 shots. 9 shots on target to Real Madrid's 3 shots on target. We've got an expected goals. I know you know that I like the statistics, Tom. An expected goals for Manchester City of 2.74 and an expected goals for Real Madrid of 1.44. I don't want to go too much into the details. Rodrigo scored early on for Real Madrid, and then they really showed very little attacking ambition. Manchester City had a whole host of chances until De Bruyne scored in the 76th minute. And then I think a lot of people thought the Real Madrid would try and come out, would try and change the game, but they didn't. They kept on exactly the same. In fact, I'm looking right now at the field tilt graphic, which is where the ball was. Was it in threatening positions to against Madrid or against City? And it shows you on the graphic where the goal is. It doesn't really affect the flow of the game at all. So even after they conceded, they were still happy to defend very deep. So, Tom, let's move on to the penalty shootout. Bernardo Silva, I presume you've seen the penalty.
Yes, it's one of those embarrassing ones.
Oh, God, it really was, wasn't it?
You try to chip down the middle.
A
and
paninka, a paninka.
But the goalkeeper had done his homework, hadn't he? He anticipated that that was what Bernardo Silva was going to do. So it just looked like the when you miss those ones, it's so embarrassing. Poor old Bernardo.
Yeah, I think a big shout has to go out to the Real Madrid goalkeeper, Andriy Lunin. 8 stops. You know, he's. I think he's saved almost 2 goals worth of expected goals. It's incredible, incredible. He's won the ball back 14 times. His long passing accuracy was good. His short passing accuracy, well, it wasn't brilliant, but he's had a great overall game. And for a player who was questioned at this level with the absence of Courtois, I think he was absolutely wonderful. And although it pains me to say it, Antonio Rudiger. He really is a man for the big occasion. He had a great game. I think he must have an Erling Haaland shaped pocket. And why do I say that, Tom? What am I playing with?
Well, if you play a game of football and you have someone in your pocket or have them in your back pocket, it means that you control your opponent. You stop your opponent from having any success against you.
Yes, and Erling Haaland must be having nightmares. I know he hasn't been on great form since Christmas, but you'd thought over the 2 matches with City creating so many chances, being literally camped inside the Real Madrid box, not even in their half, camped in their box. And I'd like just to consider a bit our friend for Dortmund, is it Fulkrung and Haaland? And I think if you're Haaland, it's got to be in some ways quite frustrating because you make the right run lots of times and you don't get the ball. So then maybe later in the game, you make that run, but you don't make it with quite the same belief and commitment that you might have done to start with. Whereas a more traditional side who play the ball when it's on and demand the ball when it's there, I think Fulkrung, for example, could be making his movement, expecting the ball a bit more, maybe getting a little bit less frustrated. Do you think part of the problem with Erling Haaland, Tom, could be the frustration of not getting enough ball when he feels the ball's there to be played?
I think he should be getting used to that by now at Manchester City. Of course, it depends on the opponent, but he would have no expectations of getting lots of space and time and playing against Real Madrid. It was clear that Real Madrid were going to set up in a defensive way and use the counter-attacking threat of Bellingham, Rodrigo and Vinicius. So I don't think Erling Haaland will be, you know, we will look at it perhaps from a distance and say he's their number 9, he's their striker, he should have lots of opportunities and goals. But actually, when you watch the way Manchester City attack, they're so very patient. They will not play the ball to Erling Haaland unless, you know, there's a very good opportunity of him being able to receive it. And usually the way that Manchester City are parked in their opponent's half, Erling Haaland just doesn't have the time or the space to receive the ball. Perhaps that is an area of game he can work on, trying to find a few more little pockets where he can do stuff. But I wasn't expecting anything from Erling Haaland in this kind of game.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. So Real Madrid through again, a famous victory for them. I mean, I would say, can they go all the way? But everybody knows they can. Will they? Probably it's Real Madrid. So who knows? Who knows? Yeah. I think there are some factors, though. I still don't think they've got a real number 9. I know Vinicius, Rodrigo and Bellingham kind of contribute with the goals between them. And I do also think they've still got issues in goal. Lunin had a great game, but he's not Courtois. And I wonder in a game where he only has 1 contribution or 2 contributions, if maybe he would be caught out. I think it's kind of easy for a goalkeeper when they know that it's all going to be coming against them and it's kind of like a them against the world mentality. And this City's done.
Sorry, I was just going to add my thoughts on this Real Madrid team because in this particular game, it was a defensive masterclass. I do agree with the fans. If Manchester City do take their chances and it forces Real Madrid to come out and play, then things might be different. But what we saw really was an incredibly disciplined performance from the whole of the, I'd say, not just the Real Madrid defence, but the midfielders in front of them as well. So it was a great team effort. They worked really, really hard because it's not easy to hold and defend so well for 120 minutes without making many mistakes against Manchester City. The one mistake did come from Rudiger. It was actually credit to Pep. He did take off Grealish and brought on Doku, who was immediately impactful, immediately a bit more lively, and he created the chance. It was a shot that was deflected across that came back, bounced back off Rudiger, a poor clearance, and Kevin De Bruyne, who actually was very, very hungry in this game, pounced on the chance and swept it away into the roof of the net. So I did feel like if anyone was going to score, it would be De Bruyne. He seemed to want it a bit more. But I think this Real Madrid team in the semi-final, they'll be playing against a team who employs different tactics. Who are they playing against?
Bayern Munich.
So I think we will see more of an attacking threat from Real Madrid in the next game.
Yeah, potentially. So, moving on to the Bayern Munich game, unfortunately. It was finally poised after London, where it was 2-2. Both teams went into the match level, knowing, of course, there's no away goals nowadays in the Champions League. So, the tie was level, totally even Stevens. Even Stevens is a way of saying tight or, yeah, even. And the first half continued being pretty even. I think Arsenal fans got to halftime relatively happy. However, I wasn't that happy. Although Arsenal had a lot of ball and we had stopped Bayern Munich looking too dangerous, I had a problem with the type of possession we had. I thought it was too predetermined. I thought it was too slow. I don't think we were willing to take risks on the ball. And I don't think really we created danger. I think we had possession without danger. And that, to me, feels like pointless possession. And then the second half, Bayern Munich really stepped it up, and they deserved their victory. It was only 1-0, but I'd say it was one of those games where it was closer to being 2-0 than 1-1, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. They just had that extra bit of quality. They were incisive, and to be incisive means to be able to cut through teams. And just in the same way that Arsenal looked kind of limited, looked toothless in possession, Bayern Munich looked exactly the opposite. Every time they got the ball, they looked like they knew how to get to dangerous areas on the pitch. And I actually think this is one of the things which defines sides at this level. Every team wants to play their kind of closed, considered, tactical game. But when the gloves come off, that's when you really see the talent and the quality of the players. And I think when the gloves came off the other day, unfortunately, I think it was one of the worst games I've seen for Declan Rice in an Arsenal shirt. I remember asking you last summer, is he the most defensive of the midfielders? And I think you said he can play there. And I said to you, is he an eight? And you said he can play there. And I've still got the same questions, Tom. I don't think he's metronomic enough to be the deepest player. I think he misses some vital passes sometimes. I don't think his passing between the lines is as good as you need for someone in that position. I think he was poor. And I also have got to lay some of the blame at Mikel Arteta, because Arsenal went hell for leather, which means to throw caution to the wind, which means to stop being cautious. With 25 minutes to go, we made some pretty big changes. He took off Jorginho, which was essentially the heart of our midfield. Jorginho was marking the pace of our passing and linking the defence to the attack. So by the end of the match, we had Gabriel Jesus on the pitch, we had Trossard, we had Nketiah, we had Havertz, we had Saka. But you'd never have noticed them, because they weren't getting any ball. The ball was kind of just going nowhere. And it was a frustrating performance in that sense. Although I feel the better side went through, I'm slightly disappointed because I don't think Arsenal showed their best. And maybe Arsenal's best would have lost. But I would be okay with that. But what I'm not okay with is not giving your best on the night. Frustrating, but at the same time, it's our first season back in the Champions League after 8 years away. We got to the quarterfinals. If you'd have offered me losing by one goal to Bayern Munich back in the summer, I'd have probably taken it. We've got some very depressing memories of playing against Bayern Munich in the past, 5-0 losses and things. And the fact that we were able to compete until the very end is good. The fact that Arsenal fans are disappointed shows how far we've come under Mikel Mikel Arteta, because we weren't even dreaming about playing Bayern Munich in the quarterfinals under the Unai Emery years. So positive things can be taken, but just to have a look at this Bayern Munich side, I think we've got some really good players in there. I'm sure all football fans will know about Kimmich and Goretzka, real players who understand the heart of a tactical passing game and when to press and how to press.
Harry Kane and Eric Dier, of course, Tottenham legends.
Yeah, no, I wasn't actually going to mention them. but actually, a couple of players who surprised me, Lehmer, their defensive midfielder, really good game. Guerreiro, really good game. Mazouari, the Moroccan left-back, very good game as well. And Manuel Neuer, I'd forgotten how good he is on the ball. He really is willing to take some risks on the ball, and he gets away with it every single time. So hats off to him. I'm really looking forward to this Bayern Munich-Real Madrid game. I think it's going to be fascinating. I think both teams have got real quality. I'd like to mention Harry Kane. Actually, he was totally anonymous over both games. He scored a penalty in London. And I do wonder, it was kind of like watching Harry Kane for England. I wonder if Harry Kane's at his best in a counter-attacking side who don't dominate possession, as opposed to a side who expect to be in the other team's half. In fact, the limited contributions he made against Arsenal over the two matches were when Bayern Munich were counter-attacking. At the times when Bayern Munich were in the Arsenal half, Harry Kane looked very quiet. But I think there is a slight issue with English football, Tom, because how can it be that Jadon Sancho isn't good enough for United? The Chelsea left-back, was it Maddison, isn't good enough for Chelsea? That Eric Dier isn't good enough for Tottenham? But these English players are populating the semi-finals now of the Champions League. So I do think sometimes we need to consider if we're getting the best out of our players, if we're making players fit into a tactic as opposed to making a tactic fit around the players we've got. I do think these are relevant questions. Tom, it's over for Arsenal. I cancelled my Movistar Champions League subscription. I'm no longer willing to pay to watch Champions League football. Back to the old pirated channels for me on a Tuesday and Wednesday night. Sad times, Tom.
I see. So, it sounds like Bayern Munich were worthy winners. It sounds like they had enough quality
The regret I have, I think we all have, is the first half in London, the two defensive errors leading to goals that were so uncharacteristic of this Arsenal side, especially since Christmas. And essentially they decided the tie because we went out by only one goal. So I think it was frustrating. But hats off to Bayern Munich. I think they deserved it. I think you force errors out of teams by the way you play, the intensity of your game, and the pressure of the situation. And Bayern Munich definitely handled it better.
Let's move on then, because you've had a groan about Arsenal, and it's still got 7 minutes for me to have a groan about West Ham.
I watched the end of the West Ham match. I thought they actually looked quite good.
Mm-hmm. They looked very good in the first half, Tim. They came out firing. They scored a goal after 14 minutes. That got the crowd going. It got everybody excited. There wasn't a huge amount of belief going into the game, but after that early goal, a lovely Bowen cross for an Antonio header, that brought us to life. And for the entire first half, West Ham were very good. They were pushing Leverkusen back. Leverkusen were making some mistakes. We were pressing them. Kudus was fantastic as usual. Edson Alvarez came back in, showed exactly what we'd missed in the first leg by not having him in that pivoting defensive midfield role. And we were great. We were so good that Xavi Alonso even made a substitute after 27 minutes. He took off one of his back three, Kusundu, the Ivory Coast, in fact, African Cup of Nations winner. He was worried about him making too many mistakes with Kudus pressuring him. So he brought on Tapsoba. And when they got to half time, he made two more crucial changes. This is Xabi Alonso for Bayer Leverkusen. He took off Schick, the Czech Republic forward, and brought on Victor Boniface. And he also brought on their very dangerous right winger or right wing back, Jeremy Frimpong. And those changes seemed to change the game. In the second half, they managed to sort of control things enough. They managed to limit the danger of West Ham. And as the game wore on, we saw David Moyes do his usual thing, which was absolutely nothing. it reminds you of watching Gareth Southgate for England sometimes. As the game is slipping away from you and a change is needed, you can guarantee that David Moyes won't make that change until after 80 minutes. And that's
exactly
what
he did. Oh, come on, Tom. That's not 100% fair. You changed Poufal for Ben Johnson in the 84th minute. Don't tell me it wasn't so efficient by changing your right back needing a goal. Let's give him some credit, though. It was the first time in 42 games that Leverkusen were looking like they might lose the game. I turned over to the West Ham match when it looked that Liverpool were definitely not going to get the result they needed. And I saw the line of final 15, 20 minutes. I thought West Ham did look good at times, but essentially Leverkusen were able to cut through West Ham a bit easily. I mean, I think Frimpong, one of the misses of the season towards the end of the game, he was through on goal. He could have squared it to a player who had an almost open goal, and he didn't just put it over. He put it well over from only about 5-6 metres out. It was a fantastic miss.
This was at the end of the game. We were having to sort of push up and leave gaps. But yes, he should have put the game to bed at that moment. He just continued to give us a little bit more hope. I have to say, we were without Lucas Paquetá. We were out without Emerson Palmieri on the left. Aaron Cresswell stepped in, did a fantastic job. We lost Naif Agurd, our Moroccan centre-back, but Ogbonna came on and did a solid job for us. He's not the most attacking of centre-backs in terms of risk-taking, but it's clear that we are a very old squad and we are a thin squad, and Leverkusen, the strength in depth that they were able to bring out from the bench showed that they had more legs, more energy, and they were able to take control of the game away from us. Having said that, I 1-1 is a good result against the German champions.
Yeah, if this Leverkusen side were in the Champions League semi-finals, would they be able? I mean, are they any worse than Dortmund or Bayern Munich? I think not. So I think hats off to German football. Liverpool have gone out as well. It's been a terrible week for English football. The only English team to go through was Aston Villa, who went through on penalties.
I have to call you on something there, Tim, because earlier in this episode, you did make a comment about Paris Saint-Germain suffering from playing in the French League. But we do have to consider that Lille, who are currently in fourth place in the French League, the same position as Aston Villa, fourth placed in the Premier League, did take them to penalties. They won that game. So perhaps French football is not as bad as we sometimes like to say.
Yeah, well, anyway, we did want to talk about this today, but we got so sucked into the Champions League and Europa League that it's been very difficult. I think it's going to be in a different standalone podcast, Tom. Is English football overrated? Do we get confused by entertainment value and quality? I think that's maybe the crucial issue here. But just to summarise, we went into this round of games thinking that the Premier League would probably get 5 Champions League places next season. Now that is almost impossible. I believe that Dortmund and all the German teams, Dortmund, Leverkusen and Bayern Munich, would all have to lose their semi-finals and Villa would have to win the Conference League for England to have a chance of that fifth spot, which for me is perfect because it looks like Tottenham are going to finish fifth. So that's great. Tom, I think that's all we've got time for today on the podcast. Thanks a lot. I'd just like to encourage all of our listeners to leave a comment, share the podcast amongst their friends, get involved in the conversation, and practice the vocabulary that they might hear on here as much as possible. So Tom, see you next time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, all our listeners. Bye-bye.